Okay, welcome to Open Lines here. Just about anything goes, whatever's on your mind in the wee small hours of the morning. We'll be back with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Good morning. It's Saturday morning for you. Let's go to Tom in Milwaukee to get us started with Open Lines. Hi, Tom. Thanks for holding.
You're welcome. Good morning, George.
Morning.
Are you guys still talking about the experiences with
Absolutely. It's all Open Lines, whatever you want to talk about.
Well, this happened to me about 2006. I was sleeping. Usually I sleep through the night. And all of a sudden, I'm aware that I'm awake, or at least my eyes are open, and my room is sort of bathed in a gray light, which was a result of the full moon. I have these Venetian blinds that are you know, sort of beige colors.
I always like that look when the moon glow kind of comes into the room. Isn't it cool?
Yeah, and it's real even. There's really no shadows, and if I didn't pull those blinds down, the full moon would, you know, be like having a light on. Well, my eyes are open, and that's what I noticed was the room color. But I can see out into the hallway, and it's pitch black in the hallway. And I became aware of a figure in the hallway. And it looked dressed like the hoodie version of the Grim Reaper, you know?
Yeah.
I could see... No features on the face. It was blacker than his clothes. And it moved forwards, floated. You know, it had no legs. And I said, I was paralyzed. I couldn't talk. I couldn't move. And so in my head, I said, you know, I cussed him. I said, get the, you know what, out of here. Yeah, and then the thing I perceived, his arm is moved to the foot of the bed. The arm came out, and it's like it grabbed under my left rib cage, reached like it just grabbed and started to squeeze. And it was, and I tried to kind of like resist it, and it got so painful. I just, all I could say to my in my head was, it just came naturally. I'm not a real religious guy like that one guy who could recite all the verses. I just said, in the name of Jesus, let go of me. And it released and backed away. And then I could move, and I could turn the light on. I had a little lamp next to me on the bed, on the nightstand. Nothing there, okay? Now, I felt it, you know what it feels like when you're running and you get that side stitch or that cramp? You know,
I've been lucky.
or if you're swimming and you get a cramp, and that's what it's.
That's
like.
The worst, by the way, especially if you're out in a lake somewhere.
Yes, I still feel that where he grabbed me to this day. And for other reasons, I had to have an MRI, and I specifically asked the doctor to look at this. And I pointed it out to him. I said, I got pain here. See if there's anything there. It might be my liver or something. And he says, no, your liver's on the other side. I said, oh, great. You know, so he said afterwards there was nothing unusual there. And I've since had a couple of colonoscopies, and I've told, you know, maybe it's internal. And I told the technician there to look at that area.
You thought you were sick, so, really?
I thought I was, you know, it was like a reminder of him, you know, grabbing a hold of me like that, and they don't see anything. I just have the
pain,
the side pain. Yeah, and I never had that before, and there was, you know, I didn't injure myself at work or anything like that.
Huh.
You know? So, you know, it's nice to know I'm not alone. I hear these other guys.
Oh my gosh, it's everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
You are not alone at all. Hey, thanks for that story, but get better. Let's go to James in St. Louis, first-time caller. Hey, James, welcome.
Hey, George, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
First off, I want to say for that previous caller that just got off the line, I do some Reiki and energy work and stuff, and so if he's open to it after I get off the line, I'll try and maybe just send him some healing for that.
Do it.
It won't go away.
Do it. Anything can help, huh?
Yeah, and I have my own entity experience. It was just last fall, actually. I'd never had anything like this before, but I went to a channeling group here in St. Louis, and an older woman kind of brings in like nice messages and gives advice and stuff, and it's real cool. But at the end of the prayer group, a woman said that an entity was there that shouldn't have been there. She had felt another woman who's very psychic herself had kind of felt something strange
Whoa.
In the room and said, you know, and she goes, it's not going on with me. And she was sitting right next to me holding my hand.
Did you feel that it was something was there too?
Not at the time. So I thought that, you know, she was just being weird. But I go home that night and I go to sleep as normal. I still didn't feel anything weird. But I become lucid in a dream, and I'm fighting with some kind of entity, and that you can feel it, that, like, so I could feel a physical weight trying to crawl up my legs in this dream, and I'm kicking it down and, like, pushing it down with my energy, and I'm kind of like, and then I wake up for real in my bed, and I'm kicking my feet, and I can still feel the weight trying to crawl up my legs. There was something there trying to crawl up my legs.
You'll probably find out there was a snake in your bed or something.
But not to beat a dead horse, but I did the same thing. I called in my personal power, and I was like, you can't be here. This is my body. This is my room. Get out. And I felt it start to recede, and then I remembered the people say to call on Archangel Michael, and I'm not a particularly religious person either. But I said, Archangel Michael, get this thing out of here. And immediately,
it worked.
Went away. Yeah, completely. Like, I mean, there was a weight on my legs. I woke up kicking my feet with a weight on my legs. And as soon as I said that, it was gone.
Isn't it amazing how that seems to work? I mean, in almost every case I have heard, when you evoke that kind of religious overtone, it goes away. Stan is in Sandy, Utah. Welcome to the program. Hey, Stan, go ahead.
Hey, this might sound nuts. I mean,
not on this program.
Thank you. I moved in this house about 30 years ago, and from day one, I've had strange activity. So I know something's around here. Well, a couple weeks ago, I'm very meticulous about my kitchen being clean when I go to bed. So when I wake up, it's spotless.
It's spotless. Yeah, there's nothing worse than waking up to dirty dishes and stuff like that.
Heard that. So I come out, and there on the counter is sitting a fork that's been twisted into all kinds of just different twists. And I look at it, and I think, who the hell did this? And I look for any marks of how it was twisted, because you couldn't do it with your hand. The fork is real
thick. Oh, my God. And were you the only human in the house at the time?
No, my wife was in here, and I went into my wife. I says, what on earth are you twisting these forks for? And she goes, Stan, I didn't do it. I never touched it. Well, again, then about 2 weeks go by, and I come out in my kitchen again in the morning, and there in my, I've got a Hinkle knife block, and there in my knife block, one of the slots was a spoon bent at a 90-degree angle.
Oh, my gosh.
I took that into my wife, and I says, are you joking with me? She goes, I swear to you, I haven't touched anything. I wouldn't do that.
And you looked at her in the eyes. You knew she was telling you the truth, right?
Oh, yeah, she was as surprised as I was. She's like, why would I go bend your spoons? I know that you'd have a cow because, you know, I treat everything very careful in the kitchen. I, you know, anyway, I was just wondering, have you ever heard of this happening?
No, I've never. Well, you know, I've heard of spoon bendings. Uri Geller, the psychic, does that. But I've never heard of entities doing it, you know, just like that. I mean, it's as if they're playing a game with you.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought, what are you trying to tell me? Like, I know you're here. I get that. And I know you're strong, obviously, or powerful, whatever that means. But they've never bothered me as far as they've never hurt anybody. But I know they're, you know, I've had things happen in the house that I know for a fact something's in here.
Do you still have the bent-up utensils?
Yes, I kept them.
Do they really look mangled up?
Yeah. The fork is so
weird.
Mangled. The tines on it, the fork. I looked to see if somebody had stuck it in a cupboard or used a tool to bend it, and there's not. That fork is as shiny as the day it was made.
I was going to think, you know, maybe could she have dropped it in the garbage disposal and she didn't want to say anything about it?
She doesn't do the dishes.
You do?
I do. Yeah, I completely do them, you know, just because I enjoy it. I like my kitchen done a certain way.
You're meticulous about stuff.
I am. And so when that fork happened, the first thing I did is I walked in the bedroom and said, what on earth is this? Because I get up fairly early, and there it is sitting in the middle of my counter, like it's like, here, I want you to see this. Well, I saw it before I even got up to the counter. I'm like, what the heck is that? And then I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. So then, you know, like I say, a couple of weeks go by, and that darn spoon is in my knife block at a 90-degree angle.
That is weird. I have never heard of that before. That is strange. Let's hope it only sticks to that, and that's bending utensils, and nothing else seems to happen. Next up, let's go to Conway, South Carolina. Let's go to Hunter. Hey, Hunter, thank you for calling.
Hey, George, how we doing?
Wonderful, thank you.
Good. I got two accounts for you. One, my buddy Lucas, you know, was having an entity hold him down in his sleep. He wasn't be able to move, breathe. And then he stuck a Bible, read the Bible before he went to bed, and it stopped. Me and my girlfriend go to this graveyard. There's a pond there, like a fish in there. And, you know, there's always type of strange accounts. I always hear loud screaming. It sounds like a foot, like a Bigfoot or something.
Yeah.
Something just crazy going on. We walked through there, and the whole night exploded with bats. And then we heard just tons of screams. I was like, I think it's time to get out of here. But there are all kinds of stuff going on here in that graveyard. It's just always something strange always happens. I don't know if it's something, that presence in that graveyard, but I don't know.
Oh, I hate graveyards like that. Don't you?
I do. It's frightful. Every time I go there, I was just like, I always have a funny feeling every time we go here.
I love it. On Friday nights, of course, I always end the program with a great song done by this guy, UFO Phil. How great, Phil. Good to have you on the program.
George, yeah, it's UFO Phil. It's been so long since we spoke. You know, it's been 6 years.
It's been a long time, but your song lives on forever, Phil.
I really appreciate it, and I have been, even though I haven't been able to call you, I have been listening, and I do hear the song. I've been getting abducted every Friday night, and the aliens have great radio reception, but the cell phone reception is terrible, so I can never call in.
That's great. How have you been? What's new with you?
Oh, George, I've been great. I have a really big announcement. Something really big has come up in my life.
Oh, what's going on?
Can you keep a secret?
You got it.
That's a yes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm going to be performing on network television this summer, George, on network prime time.
Really?
Yeah, I got a slot on it. I can't tell you the exact details because they made me sign an agreement.
Will you tell us at the right time?
Yeah, I'll give you a call later in the summer when it's going to air.
Good for you.
Well, I know, George. I get to sing a song in front of an audience and everything.
Congratulations. You excited about this?
I'm so excited, George. I'm so excited. And thank you so much for, over the years, you've really done so much for me to help me come out of my shell and to be comfortable talking to all the people. And I couldn't have done it without you, George.
I can't believe how many years have gone by. Phil, we're going on our 16th year now.
Congratulations.
And you too. So you let us know as soon as you can when we can watch this, okay?
Okay, George, thanks.
Thanks, Phil, and we'll be playing your song at the end of the night. Texts and tweets, we get them from Tom. What do you have, Tommy?
True story, I got an email.
By the way, wasn't it great talking to Phil?
He's a great guy. True story, I got an email from somebody in administration. He stopped by one day and wanted to have lunch, and I wasn't here. It was a little bit early. He flipped out the receptionist.
He did?
You ever seen a picture of Phil dressed up?
I'd love to see it.
It was awesome. That's really cool. Crazy. This one is from Gerard.
Well, by the way, I was having dinner last night at the Great Greek Restaurant.
Yes.
And who was there but one of the world's greatest drummers, Kenny Aronoff.
Mr. Aronoff, an awesome guy.
And he went nuts because he thought you were coming right behind me, and he waited. He was picking up carryout. And he had it there when I walked in. It was for his wife. And he stayed there for 35 minutes talking to me.
I love it. He's a great guy.
Good. He was telling me how he's playing with John Fogerty, Jerry Lee Lewis. Did you know he's still playing?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. still doing that, and he's one of the best. But anyways, what's our text?
This is from Gerard in Alabama. George, I heard when you asked listeners for horrid stories, and I want to turn the tables. George, tell us what your most horrid story is.
I can't
tell. Wow.
It's that horrible.
Is that bad?
Yeah. It's something that we've kept in the family, and we don't talk about it.
Can you hint?
Nope. Nope.
It's that horrid, really?
We have always believed if we talk about it, it's bad karma.
Wow.
And something else could happen.
Wow.
So I just can't. You're probably going crazy. I know you. You need to find out
now
what
I got
to
know.
I can't tell you.
Forever? Like
until the end of time.
Oh, man.
I can't do it.
I guess that's an answer.
Perry in Santa Barbara, welcome to the program. Hi, Perry. Thanks for holding.
Hi, George. Oh, you're so welcome. It's well worth it to spend a early Friday evening.
Ah, it's the best.
Night with you guys there. And let me tell you, Tommy is such a wonderful guy. I tell you.
He's got a heart of gold.
I always want to talk to him longer, but he's so busy. You know.
Yeah, that's true.
I just wanted to tell you really briefly, and I'm really going to go into the main subject here. Okay? I promise it won't take long.
Sure. Yeah, by the way, if we get to the break, I'll just hold you over until we come back.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate that, my friend. Listening to a lot of Art Bell on YouTube, and I can't believe he's gone. I mean, I really can't believe he's gone.
You can't believe. I was on the air that night when these stories were trickling in. I couldn't believe it. I thought, you know, it was Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And nobody could really confirm it. And I'm saying to myself, I can't go with this story until it's confirmed. I'm not going to be the one to say something, and I'm wrong.
I don't blame you because I listened and I held on, you know, to it. I got iHeartRadio on the local Comcast cable
here
on the television, you know. And my dad listens to you, too, with his headphones all the way down in the garage.
That's great.
So we're listening, you know, the KFI and all of that, you know, with you on there. By the way, your show is going to be, the replay is going to be preempted for the royal wedding.
The wedding this time. It's coming up, another two and a half hours, I think.
Yeah. But anyway, let me continue here.
Okay.
I wanted to ask Rosemary Ellen Guiley, but, you know, I understand, I mean, there's only so much time, that, you know, Major Ed Dame one time said, and this is referring to the shooting and the murders in southeast Texas, in Santa Fe, Texas.
Right.
One time he said that he believed that there was demonic influence over that. Now, I believe, George, part of it is that, but I heard reports, and I was talking to Tim Conway Jr. on KFI, and very briefly, and his newsman Aaron Bender,
good people.
That they are so wonderful there. You know, I mean, they're down to earth. They're wonderful. They're kind. All of them there. And so basically, I asked Aaron Bender, you know, to confirm this on the air that this person. And I don't want to go any further than that. And I'm not defending him for what he did. But apparently he was abused by a lot of fellow high school students and the coach. He was on a junior
varsity. That'll screw you up. Let me hold you over just for a little bit longer when we hit this break. We'll come back in a moment with more final open lines. We are back with open lines here on Coast to Coast. Let's go back to Perry in Santa Barbara. Perry, there's no question that the abuse that some of these young kids take from other kids, their parents, helps contribute to the violence that they create.
Yes, and my dad is 80 years old, and I'm 52, and my mom's in a nursing home about 8 blocks away, and she's going on 75. But, you know, I talk to all, you know, like conference calls and, you know, and go down there.
Good for you.
I can't get around right now because I'm still in a wheelchair. I had surgery earlier, and then my hip is just killing me.
You're
I can't walk. But anyway, let me stick to the subject here. I think the answer or part of the answers can come to, listen, if you're a coach, and I don't know if this story is true, but I've heard it on KFI earlier today, that he was in junior varsity, this student, and the coach, you know, picked on him and made fun of him, and, you know, he was, also ridiculed by some of the students. And another telltale sign, the trench coat, you know, going back to Columbine.
Mm-hmm. Right,
you know?
Right.
Why didn't anybody see this, George?
Well, that's a good question, Perry, because you would think you would see some of these telltale signs. The kid comes in 90-degree weather wearing a trench coat and keeps it on. I mean, if I were a teacher, I'd say, first of all, let's check this kid out, see what's in the trench coat. But it's very weird. But there should have been some signs there. His parents should have been getting him some help. It's just a sad, sad, pathetic story. And what's even sadder, it's going to happen again and again. Thank God they had a couple armed security guards in the school, or it could have even been worse. Let's take a couple more calls here. Let's go to Nutika in the state of Washington. Hi there, Nutika. Welcome to the program.
Hi, George.
Hi. Good to have you with us.
Nice to be here. So should I just get right into the story? Because I've never done anything like this.
Yeah, before. Sure. What happened to you?
Okay, right on. So we were traveling from Nashville, Tennessee, up here to Washington. We have family up here. It was my brother, me, my sister, and her husband. And we were road weary, so we stopped in Grants, New Mexico, at an old Catholic church. And it was converted into a shelter where you could just rest up or, you know, if you didn't have a place to live. So we decided to sleep there for the night. And my brother was nervous the whole time. I don't know. He had a creepy feeling. We all ended up laying down. We locked the door, laid down to go to sleep. And sometime in the night, there was a dark, shadowy figure hovering over me. And it was like swaying side to side. Like it was waiting to grab me, but it couldn't. It's hard to explain. But the next day, me and my sister discussed it, and something was holding her down, and she felt like it was trying to get to me for some reason. So,
what do you think conjured it up?
I don't know. I was pregnant with my first child. It could have had something to do with that. It could have been the fact that it was in an old Catholic church, and you know, there's a lot of things can stem from old buildings.
Sure, but you asked the question, though, why me, right?
I did. And, yeah. You know, I feel like it's kind of followed me my whole life. I was 18 at the time. I'm 38 now. I feel like it's kind of followed me. I feel like I've had a lot of really bad luck in my life. And I'm a good person. Like, I'll give a dollar to somebody in need in a heartbeat. But I feel like a lot of really unusual bad luck has happened to me.
Well,
I feel like maybe in a way it's followed me.
Hey, how's the firstborn, by the way?
The firstborn is good, but we're a cursed family. She's got a child on the way, a son on the way. She's 19 now. We had a lot of separation in life. You know, the mother I wanted to be didn't happen. Just a lot of crazy, crazy things have happened since this. It never did anything to me. It was like it was waiting or it just hovered. And a lot of people say that they wear a hat or have red eyes. It was human form. It was huge, but it was black. It was void of anything.
Yeah.
It,
like a shadow person. Hey, thanks for the story. Thanks for sharing it. Cornelius is in Louisiana. Hi there, Corny. Is he with us? Nope. He's gone, disappeared. Phone probably went. Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Michael.
Hello, George. George, the greatest show on earth is coming up. You and Ian Punnett doing a retrospective on Art Bell, almost like Natalie Cole singing with her father after he died. Here's how it goes. You bring in John Loftus and his group of former CIA and former FBI agents. We're going to bring peace in this country, we're not going to have major networks waging war against our intelligence department. Here's what you do. You replay the Art Bell tape. You and Ian Punnett stopping it at opportune times to make your comments. You supply all these friends of John Loftus with transcripts of the whole show that he did with the highest-ranking Soviet official ever to defect.
Stanislav Lunov, I believe his name was.
How do you spell that?
L-U-N-E-V.
Okay.
Pretty sure that's it.
Okay, you replay that. You supply transcripts to everybody, including everybody on Capitol Hill, especially Senator Mark Warner of Virginia. You supply transcripts of it, and then you and Ian Punnett, as no other broadcasters in America can do, take this apart piece by piece, analyzing it with the help of John Loftus and his friends, and we will have peace in America again.
Well, we need it. Michael, thank you. Have yourself a good weekend, too, my friend. Truly a great weekend indeed. Let's go next to Andy in Toronto. Andy, got about a minute for you. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Love the music on your show, by the way.
Thank you.
I got a kindred spirit with the folks who decide what music comes on. Going back to Mr. Elie Marzulla, folks.
Uh-huh. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I you know what?
You called yesterday with him, right?
He called, when did he call? Wednesday and his previous show. A couple of points. He leaves out a lot of stuff, and he's very deceptive. And I think
Fatima, right?
Yes. And all of your Spanish listeners out there, Spanish-American, Mexican-American, Cubans, et cetera, you guys know what the black legend is, right? And if you don't, I tell everybody to Google that, because what Mr. Mazzulli's doing here is he's presenting a new form of the black legend, or what the Spanish say is the La Lee.
Well, don't forget, though, he did say, though, that this was just his opinion.
Well, it was his opinion, George, but remember, he's pushing forward that it's a demonic space alien.
Yeah, he does believe that. Speaking of strange things, Alton, Illinois, up on the banks near the Mississippi River, is the Piesaw bird. And I've had more emails, I don't know why, this week from people that said, you had a recording on the Piesaw bird years ago. Please, please play it again. Before the village of the Illini, the mighty river swept to the south, clear and fresh, and the surrounding woods were rich with game. The bluffs and the mighty trees shielded the Illini from the harsh winds that sometimes swept in from the north. Their village was secure and a happy place. Chief of the Illini was Watoga. He and his old friends had led his tribe in the ways of peace for most of his life. Watoga and his people loved their home and their way of life. Then one morning, as the sun began to climb towards the summit of its cloudless sky, terror touched the Illini. The village stirred. A number of younger braves were leaving on an early morning fishing expedition. Some were already on the river in their canoes, others preparing to embark, when suddenly the very earth seemed to shudder with the sound of an alien scream. Out of the western sky came a gigantic flying monster. Its body was much the size and shape of a horse. Long white fangs stabbed upward from the protruding lower jaw, and flames leaped from its nostrils. Two white deer-like horns angled wickedly from its head. Its huge wings pounded the air with such force the trees bent. Its stubby legs held dagger-like talons, and its spiked tail wound around the grotesque body three times. Almost before the braves realized their danger, the beast, soon to be named the Piesaw bird, swooped across the beach and carried one away. From that moment on, the Illini were terrorized by this incredible and bloodthirsty monster. Each morning and afternoon thereafter, the Piesaw bird came, shattering the peace of the village with its blood-chilling screams and the thunderous beat of its wings. More often than not, it returned to its lair with a victim. The Illini looked to their chief, Watoga, for a solution to this menace. Time and time again, he had led them through the trials of famine, illness, and the threat of warlike tribes. But Watoga felt helpless before this danger, and the years weighed heavily upon him.
The beast seemed invulnerable. His body was covered with scales like a coat of iron. The best efforts of Terahai Anawaka, the arrow maker and the tribe's finest archers, were to no avail. Then Watoga appealed to the Great Spirit. For nearly a full moon, he prayed and fasted. Then in a dream, he found the answer. The body of the Payasa bird was not protected under the wings. After offering thanks to the Great Spirit, Watoga called the tribe together and devised a plan that could destroy the Payasa bird. And all that day, Terahai Anawaka sharpened arrows and painted them with poison while the tribe fasted and prayed. That night, Watoga and six of the finest braves crept to the top of the high bluff overlooking the Great Father of Waters. When dawn came, only Watoga was visible, standing straight and firm in the full view. The braves were hidden nearby behind a rock ledge, bows ready. Suddenly, the scream of the Payasa bird broke the silence, and the winged monster swept into view. Immediately, it sighted Watoga, and with what seemed like a shriek of delight, it pounced as it did. Watoga fell to the ground and grasped the strong roots that grew there. The pain of the talons sinking into his flesh inspired him to grip the roots even more tightly as the Payasa bird raised its great wings in an effort to carry off its victim. The six braves stepped from their hiding place and shot six poisoned arrows into the unprotected place beneath the beast's wings. Again and again, the bird raised its wings to fly, but Watoga held fast. With each and every time, six poisoned arrows drove into the bird's vulnerable spot. Finally, the poison did its job. With a scream of agony, the Payasa bird released its hold on Watoga and plunged down the bluff to disappear forever in the swift waters of the great river. Carefully, tenderly, the braves carried Watoga to his teepee, where in time he was nursed back to health. Then a great celebration was held in the camp of the Illini. The next day, the arrow maker mixed paints and, carrying them off to the bluff, painted a picture of the Payasa bird in tribute to the victory of Watoga and the Illini. Every time an Indian passed that painting, he shot an arrow in salute to the bravery of Watoga and the deliverance from the Payasa bird. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.